In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Welcome back, everybody, to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. You know us as your partners in wine, crime, and time. But Sarah, let everybody know why they're really tuning in this week.
We are so excited, you guys. We have the creator, co-director, executive producer of the documentary that we are all obsessed with, Telemarketers, Sam Litman-Stern. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you guys.
And we just have to say, I mean, anybody who watched Telemarketers knows how dedicated you are to making a finished product looking great. He's currently for us in a stairwell in his hotel room for Wi-Fi and lighting needs. And that, I mean, is if you haven't watched the doc yet, that's reason enough alone to be like, this man is committed to a finished product.
And I'm in South America. I'm in Colombia.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I'm not even in the United States. I'm down south, way down south.
Are you there for work or play or both?
Both, actually. So I actually live in Colombia. So I've lived in Medellin for 2 years. Wow. You guys are always welcome there anytime. You got a place to stay. And so after the doc came out, I just needed a little vacation. So I went to the beach. So I'm here in Santa Marta. It's beautiful. And I've just been actually. I turned my phone off for like 5 days to just relax by the beach, but I'm heading back home to the city tomorrow. But I'm back and forth between the States and Colombia for actually 3 years in November.
Wow. Yeah,
I like, good for you.
Yeah, I'm a character. I'm a wild.
I love that you're both a character and a Jersey boy because yes. I'm from New Jersey as well. So that made me really happy to see in like the first few minutes of the
documentary.
You can take
your boy out of Jersey, but you can't take Jersey out of the boy.
Oh, God bless that. For better or for worse?
Yes.
For better or for worse?
Yes. I've been with you for a while. I love that. Awesome.
Amazing. Well, we loved Telemarketers. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the process was like taking it to HBO? Because we know it was so many years in the making, this documentary.
Yeah. I mean, it's been what a journey. I mean, I first dropped out of ninth grade when I was 14, you know, in Jersey. I grew up in Highland Park, New Jersey, right by Rutgers University, in Brunswick. And dropped out of high school. My parents are, we don't really get into my own history, family history. My parents are total hippies. So they were like, they're pretty hands off. They were into hands off parents, latch door, what are they called? Latchkey parents.
Latchkey.
Yeah. So they were like, all right, you can leave school, but you have to get a job. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to McDonald's, Burger King, and, you know, they told me I was too young. So my buddy told me about Civic Development Group. And I remember riding my bike across the bridge into New Brunswick and, going to the call center, reading the script, getting hired the next day. So the journey goes, I'm 36 now. So we're talking about, you know, over 20 years since first walking into the CDG office. And I pitched it to HBO first I brought it to my cousin, Adam Balolo, who works with Rough House and Danny McBride. And then we developed the project for actually 13 months and then finally brought it to HBO in 2021. So it's been, they picked it up. So that was kind of the process. It's been a 20 plus year process.
And because that was the thing that shocked me so much watching it. I was like, all of this footage, I love that you were literally just this kid that was just filming everything going on because I'm back then you were just like uploading it to YouTube and everywhere, just more so for fun than anything else too at a lot of the start, which I feel it shocked me first. I was like, because you hear stories that happen, you're like, oh, if only there was footage. I was like, how does he have all this? But then when you say that you were like a kid who just dropped out of high school, it tracks for like a high school or like a younger kid who's like, I'm just going to be like a little shit and film stuff.
Totally. 1,000%. That was exactly what it was. I mean, yeah, my house growing up was almost like living on a hippie commune, but in central New Jersey in an apartment. So my parents always would have people like living in the house. So there was a Puerto Rican shaman that my dad met at a Santeria shop in Trenton that lived on the couch. Then we had, there was a homeless guy living in the pantry. So to get to the microwave, you had to jump, walk over, rob the homeless man. And my friend, totally wild. And, but there was a woman named Phoenix, a family friend of my parents who was living with us too. She was a little bit down in her luck. And she gave me my first camcorder when I was 13. And I was kind of just the kid that I just kind of gravitated towards the camera. And I was always, yeah, you know, the kid that was in the group of friends, like filming my friends smoking weed or just messing around in Jersey and painting graffiti. That was like my other big passion as a teenager. But I was just gravitating. I never thought of anything other than filming for fun. And then when I ended up at CDG, that's when YouTube started, the early days of YouTube, like talking about 2005, 2006. So we started just filming these office shenanigans and just putting them up on YouTube. So that was, and it's funny, you can actually find them. They're kind of difficult to find, but there's like three YouTube channels. I'll send it to you guys so you have it. Like,
yes, please.
A few people have found these, come across them, but for the most part, they're kind of hidden in the depths of YouTube. But that's how it all began.
I love that.
I mean, that's really dedication to pursuing a story, like two decades.
Yeah. I mean, I was obsessed with the story for years, like totally obsessed.
Yeah. Oh, because I was going to say, because it was interesting, like reading about, like, you've been doing a lot of like documentaries and like for like outlets and everything like that for a while. Was this story always in the back of your mind that you'd like one day? Could you talk about, like, was it the timing just right now, or were you just like, or from the flip side too, like to pitch it to like a network, like an HBO, you're like, I now have enough of my own resume to show them like, hey, I know what I'm doing type of thing.
Yeah. You know what? It kind of, so yeah, I was filming basically at CDG for working at Civic Development Group up until they got shut down. I got fired for putting videos on YouTube, as you see in episode one. And then they got shut down in what was at the time the biggest consumer protection lawsuit in U.S. history. And then Pat and I started going even deeper down the rabbit hole after that, but then kind of stopped the investigation and Pat kind of disappeared, you see, in episode two. But, during that time, so I went to Temple Film School in 2010 in Philly. And then I started interning at Vice in 2011, so like the old days of Vice, and I got a job at Vice as a production assistant, and then worked my way up to being like a producer director, and it kind of worked in that like short form doc space for a bunch of years.
Yeah.
But I was always obsessed with the CDG story. Like literally, it was, I have to do it before I die. Like that was in the back of my head. I just, whatever it is, even if it comes out for free on the internet, like I have to finish this thing. I used to dream about the project, like dream about CDG. I was just totally obsessed. I just never had the opportunity to, even at some of those companies, to like get it, you know, to pitch it to them, even when I was working in some of these companies. But I kept following the story for years and would read up about it. And I guess during that time, I was really developing my skills as a documentary filmmaker, because, you know, Vice, we always said, was like documentary boot camp working there in back in the day. So, yeah. And then I ended up moving to Los Angeles in 2016, and my mom, I was all by myself. I actually moved with an ex-girlfriend to LA from New York, and then we ended up breaking up. Happens. But my mom's like, you're all alone. You need to go see your cousin Adam, who's a filmmaker. You know, very Jewish mother, worried about me. And you got to see your mother. You got to see your cousin. So I ended up meeting up with my cousin-in-law, Adam, and his wife, who's my cousin, who I hadn't seen since I was a kid. And that's how I linked up with Adam Balala, who's the co-director, my cousin. But basically, it turned out that he had worked on a bunch of projects that I was a big fan of. I didn't even know. He directed a documentary. He directed a movie called Bomb the System, which was my favorite graffiti movie. And when I was a teenager. And he also directed, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Little Wayne documentary, Carter. And so I was a fan of his work. I didn't know that my cousin-in-law, you know, was a filmmaker. And I was there. I was Adam and his wife's only family in LA too. We'd moved from Brooklyn. So we just became really close. Yeah. So at the time he wasn't working with Rough House. He was just kind of freelancing. Now, fast forward a couple months later, it was early 2020, right before COVID, and my cousin Adam calls me up. He's like, "Hey, dude, I just started working to start the production the documentary side of Rough House, the documentary arm of Rough House Productions, or Rough House Pictures for Danny McBride." And he's like, "Do you have anything you want to pitch?" It's like, "Yeah, sure. I actually, you know, I have a bunch of ideas." So I went in to the Rough House office and I pitched. I just elevator pitched Telemarketer. And he was like, "That sounds just, you know, right up our alley. That sounds amazing." And he's like, "Can you send me some footage?" So I sent him some of the raw footage that I had from the office, and he sent it around to the Rough House guys, and everyone loved it. So then he brought it. He also was friends with Josh and Betty Safdie, Adam is, and so he brought it to the Safdies as well, and they loved it. So we had, like, you know, two, you know, powerhouse production companies that were super into it and had, like, the same kind of creative ideas that Adam and I had. You know, we never wanted to make something that was stiff or boring. We wanted if you weren't watching and laughing and then also being shocked and also loving the characters, it wasn't something that we wanted to make. We weren't trying to make something that was like a 2020 documentary. It was supposed to raw, funny, just everything that was real, just super true to the story. So we ended up developing it with Rough House and Alara, which is the Safdie's production company. And then we brought it, after we put together like a sizzle reel, we brought that to HBO, and HBO was like super into it. Super supportive, thank God. There's old footage of Pat and I in the office from, like, I don't know, 2007 or something. It never got into the documentary, but it's us saying, maybe one day we'll get this on HBO. So that was kind of our dream all along, was to get it on HBO. So it's very, like, surreal, and I almost have to, like, pinch myself. Like, okay. Did it really happen? Did we really get it to HBO? So it's, but we're, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's been a wild journey. Thank you. It's been so much fun, and it's so excited to have it out there right now.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
I'm glad you brought up the characters because I feel like that was so much fun and so interesting about watching the documentary. I feel like we got to ask, how is Pat doing? How is your relationship?
Pat's doing great. He's been focusing on taking care of his wife, Sue. You know, Sue has been struggling with cancer and different, you know, she's actually in remission right now, thank God. But she is Pat's world. And I really respect him for it. I mean, he's just fully taking care of her, taking her to doctor's appointments. And they have this just really beautiful connection. They're adorable. One of the best couples that I know. I mean, they've been together for, I guess, over almost 30 years now since Pat's super happy and Sue's super happy. They love, you know, they're excited about the documentary. Pat's getting recognized locally, which has been a help for him. He's like, yeah, he called me. He's like, I just got recognized at McDonald's yesterday. And he's like, yeah, yeah, they're taking pictures of me. I'm like, that's cool, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy the ride, bro. So he's just, he's just having a fun. He's having a ball. And Sue's really excited about it. We love, you know, all the press is really, you know, pretty overwhelmingly positive. And he's really excited about, Senator Richard Blumenthal recently put out this, I guess it was yesterday or the day before. No, it was September 11th.
Something like that. Yeah.
September 11th. Yeah. Yeah. Richard Blumenthal just put out that whole statement about that he's going to try to make some changes in the industry. So we'll see what happens. You know, Pat still wants to do it. Pat's goal is still to testify in front of Congress. So, but this seems to be a step in the right direction. Yeah, so he's good. Pat's good.
Do you think the documentary had something to do with Senator Blumenthal coming out with this announcement?
Oh, 1,000%. That I can say for sure. Because they actually were in touch with us the whole time. So they reached out. So look, I'm going to be totally candid. I mean, you know, we did, first of all, we really appreciate that the senator even took the time to meet with us. I mean, we reached out to a lot of politicians, and he was the only one that would meet with us and hear out our case and hear everything. You know, and he didn't have to do that. So we definitely appreciate him doing that. You know, and I think it was just a win just for Pat and myself to get from, you know, kind of being self-described losers working at a shitty telemarketing company to being in front of a senator, I think, and being, you know, in DC, I think it's a win. That being said, you know, we were supposed to have an hour with the senator. He gave us 7 minutes. What you watched in the documentary is pretty much uncut, you know, very little editing. And he promised that, you know, he told us that he, you know, his staff would meet with us right afterwards and to look at the evidence. They didn't, which you can see in the documentary. And then we followed up with, all, I think it was 70 or 80 pages of evidence, radio silence. You know, we didn't hear anything until episode 3 came out. And then his social media, I was told, was overwhelmed with comments like, what, you know, really, you know, call Pat. I can't believe you did it to Pat. You know, it was just in all of his social media. I'm sure he got letters. And so he decided to take action, you know, so his team was in contact with us. They sent us the press release before it went out to the public. And he also was interviewed for an article in a Connecticut newspaper. And he mentioned that he was a little bit, I don't want to quote him, but something like he was a little bit caught off guard by Pat's untraditional interview technique, especially him taking his sunglasses off in a dramatic like fashion. And that was kind of his excuse for why he did it so fast, which, you know, but I think so that was definitely in response to the HBO documentary and really the response from the public. So people really reached out and, you know, with comments and probably emails, and he had to say something. So.
And well, obviously I'm sure that was like a hope for you when this came out. Did you think like the realisticness, did you think it would actually elicit a response? Cause you see so many times like a doc comes out and you're like, oh, that like, that's going to make people do things. And usually politicians could just go like, they cover their eyes, have a long weekend, and then they're good. Were you kind of surprised that it actually was able to elicit an actual response?
Yeah, I really was. I mean, I thought there was going to be some sort of action or attempt at action, but I wasn't sure. I didn't think it was going to come from the senator. I thought something would happen. I didn't know what. I just thought there was going to be some kind of response in DC in some way, whether it actually did something or not. But I was totally surprised. We were all, the whole film crew, we were very surprised. Pat was surprised, you know, because we hadn't heard anything. I mean, we followed up several times and, you know, it was radio silent. So we were not expected to hear it. And I think it's really cool. And it's definitely a win, especially for Pat. I mean, that was Pat, you know, at its best. I was so proud of him in that interview because he came prepared. He was just on point. And, you know, and it really, it worked, you know. I hope, you know, we'll see what happens with the legislation, but just that step is going in the right direction. I was a little disappointed personally that the senator didn't mention the police union's involvement in this crazy world of telemarketing for police organizations. So it's a little bit like, in my opinion, until the police union involvement in this, and these are the major, the biggest police organizations in the United States, you know, the Fraternal Order of Police, other police unions, and they've been wrapped up in this way of fundraising for a long, long time, you know. So I think until they're held accountable, I don't know if you can stop this thing, because you can take one telemarketing company down, as we've seen over and over again, but then these police organizations just jump in with another one. You know, so we'll see what happens, but I'd like to see some accountability, and I'd like to see a reaction from the Fraternal Order of Police. I haven't seen any reaction from the Fraternal Order of Police yet.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is have you heard anything from any of the unions? I know you guys got radio silence pretty much from all of them in the documentary.
So we heard, in episode 2, we interviewed John Hulse. And he was the vice president of the Police Benevolence Association. And so we heard from him and the Police Benevolence Association in New Jersey. And it was overwhelmingly positive response. I was getting texts. I was getting emails. The Police Benevolence Association is like the major police union in New Jersey. And they got wrapped up in their own controversy with Civic Development Group in the 90s, when they were using CDG, and they stopped using telemarketers after. Now, that doesn't mean that other states' police benevolence associations aren't using. It's just New Jersey. So their New Jersey PBA is very against telemarketing. And I think there also is some kind of competition, I think it seems like, between them and the FOP. I don't know, but They're just all, they put it on their website, the documentary. They're talking about it in their newsletters.
Yes.
I actually have a friend who's a cop in from the childhood, and he's like, he messaged me. He's, I guess, in, I didn't even know he was in the PBA. He texted me and he's like, hey, dude, I just wanted you to know, like, they're bringing this up in the board meetings. Like, everyone in the PBA is talking about this documentary. So we heard from the PBA. They, thumbs up for the PBA. So, okay. At least in New Jersey. At least in New Jersey. Yeah, at least in Jersey.
Jersey strong. Okay, that's Jersey. At least good to know. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Now, in terms of the FOP, no, radio silence. I don't, wait, no, that's, sorry, that's not true. The can, I believe it was the Connecticut Fraternal Order of Police, was the president of the Connecticut State Fraternal Order of Police was quoted in an article, and that said that it was the same one where Blumenthal was interviewed, and the president said that they still use telemarketers, but said their percentages that they get are much better, and so the documentary is hurting them. Yeah. So that was the one FOP response that I saw. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty wild stuff.
I'm just curious now too, because obviously this telemarketers has been getting such great response and reaction from audience members. This was like your literal labor of like your entire life so far, because it's just been like your sleepy time like dream to come true. Yeah, and now totally. It's come true. Do you have more stories that you like that have as strong a pull on you, or for like the next documentary you want to do? Is it something like, are you searching for the next inspiration? Do you have some things brewing, and would you want to be a little more removed from what you tackle next? Because this is like very personal to you.
That's a really good question. So I had two bucket list items in my life that I was like, I have to do this before I die. You know, like one was to backpack from the United States to Chile, which I did that in 20. In December 2017, I was living in Los Angeles, and I went to the border of LA, I went to the border of Mexico, which is 2 hours south of Los Angeles. And I just kept going south for 6 months, mostly buses and hitchhiking. So that's how I learned Spanish. And I ended up,
Rosetta, you can go to hell, Rosetta Stone. Duolingo, we're good. No, honey, I'm hitchhiking my way to fluency.
Let's put a thumb on the side of the road. So that was a bucket list. I don't know why. I always wanted to see Central and South America. I think big part of it was growing up in Central New Jersey. It's so diverse. So I had, my second family was Puerto Rican. Like my best friend's family were Puerto Rican. I had friends who were Bolivian, Colombian, Ecuadorian, all these Spanish speaking countries. So I was really interested, and we're connected. It's the same continent. So that was a bucket list item. And then the second was to finish the telemarketing documentary. That was my other big bucket list item. Wow. I had to finish it. Now I'm creating some new bucket list items. So yeah, I mean, I've been working in full time since I started in film, since I started at Vice, you know, in 2011. So just full time, whether it was, you know, full time in offices for media companies or freelancing. But I just love filmmaking. I just love documentary filmmaking. Like, I love telling stories. I never feel like I'm working as long as I'm working on documentaries. I have a few different ideas in the works right now, you know, but I'm also really, I don't know what's going to happen with telemarketers, because now that, basically, anytime Pat calls me, I'm like, oh man, I should be filming with him. But if he ends up getting, but I've been trying to give him a little space, because I'm like, I'm an overshooter, and I'm always like, you know, for the last couple of years, I've just been with Pat, like really filming with him a lot. So I'm trying to give him a little space, just so he can focus on Sue, which is totally understandable. But if we end up getting, who knows what'll happen with Blumenthal? If we end up being able to testify in front of Congress, or Pat does, I'll be right there with the camera. I'm going to keep documenting. He wants to do a cross-country Amtrak vacation with his wife. maybe to Los Angeles. So if that happens, he told me, please come along and film it. So I'm always like trying to film with Pat. And who knows what might happen? I mean, we might be able to do some other work in the telemarketing space. I mean, there's so many other telemarketing scams out there. My dad got scammed. They said his computer was broken. Someone called him and he got scammed out of $700. So, I mean, there's some things brewing in that, possibly.
And now it's also like texts and emails and DMs. Yeah. Like telemarketing has evolved too. It's insane.
Big time, big time. And then I've been filming with a bunch of reggaeton artists in Colombia. So I've been working on I've come from like a music background. I kind of got my feet wet, started in this doing music videos, like rap music videos. So I might, I'm working on some of that, but yeah, so I've got a bunch of stuff in the works, but I'm still kind of just now, I'm still really curious what happens with telemarketers. Is there going to be change in this industry? Because the calls, as we're having this interview right now, you can find them online. I'll send them to you guys. There's websites that pick up the calls, which I'm obsessed with looking at. And the calls are going out right now more than ever, more money. Police unions still involved. Now, as you see in episode 3, you have PACs, which political action committees. Still calling for police, firefighters, cancer. Now they're doing autism packs, which we don't see as much. We don't really explore that in the show. We focus a little bit more on the police element of it. But all these other they're actual total scams. They're unregulated and they're calling for, hey, we're raising money for autism. And it all goes into, telemarketers, businessmen's pockets. Then you have artificial intelligence, robocalls. I mean, this industry is crazy. By the way, I'll give you one little secret because I still have
secrets.
So I still have friends in the industry, I have friends that never left. They're still on the phones since CDG. And they'll send me some pretty wild stuff. So Sam and Pat memes have been banned from the group chats in the telemarketing industry, at least in the company that some of my friends work at. Which I think is hilarious. You cannot mention our names. And I was shown screenshots. Yeah. Like up there.
That's like an honor.
It's an honor. It's totally an honor. The murderer who was in episode 2 is he's still there, he's still calling, he's the best caller. And he was told that he was tricked into being in the documentary. That was his excuse. He's also training to run a marathon. I always say, I'm all for redemption. I'm all for doing your time. That man should not be free. There's still people in prison for marijuana charges. And this dude, but it's so darkly ironic. And, it's almost like there's like such very a layer of dark humor. This guy's the number one caller. And he's calling for police organizations, has everyone's addresses, credit card information right in front of him. And, you see it in episode 2, it's like he's murdering people on the phone when they hang up on him.
It was scary to see him kind of go off on the people after they hung up.
It was terrifying. And I was like this on the wall.
Oh, yeah. And you were there. Thinking, yeah. Oh, my God.
With the camera. And I'm thinking, I'm like, why is this guy letting me film this? Like, why is he doing this? Like, and I think it shows something about his, wherever his mind is. That he just, let it loose. He's got serious anger problems that he's taken to the extreme in several times. And yeah, so that was pretty wild. But yeah, so that's, another day in the interesting world of telemarketing.
Another interesting day in your life too, because you just you're like, yeah, because I'd be like, okay, camera close. I'm going to go. Would not be backpacking. Yeah. I would not be doing a cross-country train. That sounds fun in theory. Sounds very stressful. But you somehow
come to Colombia,
make it through all these
situations.
I am going.
Cool. We're there.
I am going to be on your couch. Please, don't even question that.
Oh, I got a glamping for you. Ready to go.
Okay, glamping was not okay. I'll do glamping for you. Okay, I'll try my best.
Or bedrooms. Yes. There's bedrooms too. Don't worry. There's
okay, I'll do bedrooms. I'll do bedrooms. Okay, yes.
Well, thank you so much, Sam. We will see you in Colombia, and in the meantime, we'll be looking out for your next documentary.
Awesome. I really appreciate you guys having me. And anything you need, anytime, just let me know. You know, consider me a friend.
Oh, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you guys.
I mean, now I am just like as obsessed with him as I am with the telemarketer's doc. And I don't think he realizes, I think he does, like, we are going, Sarah, to Colombia.
I know.
Like, I'm going. The second he said chef. Flies
after this.
Yeah. done and done.
Podcasting live. Yes.
If you guys have recommendations for us there, or, you know, I'm curious. Recommendations for us to do in Colombia with him, or if you guys have, like, obviously not, probably not as crazy of work stories, but you know what I mean? Stories about where you've been. It's in a safe space. Put them in the Facebook group, Not Another True Crime group, or you could DM them to Sarah at Not Another True Crime.
Yes, I had you guys DM me stories of scams that you all fell for. I loved that. So send that to me. And I was putting it on the stories. It's anonymous. And having people vote. And listen, like, you, I promise you are going to be in good company, because we've all fallen for some kind of scam or another in our lives. So, so DM me at Not Another True Crime Pod or at Sarah Lameme, where you can follow us on Insta as well. And if you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. And also follow Danny at Kashmir Danny with the K.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. And until next week, we'll see you guys. Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales-Pico, Sean Kilby, and Rebecca Sosmacat. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Sarah Lameme. Be sure to follow at Not Another True Crime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send all of your emails to natc@betches.com.
Betches.